my name is Audie Anker, and today I will be speaking with Carl Eyinger about his paper, The Great Recession versus the Great Depression, Stylized Facts on Siblings That Were Given Different Foster Parents.
Hello.
Hello.
It's Carl. You are Adi?
Yes. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you too. Let us start.
I was wondering if you could just start by telling me some of the general information about your paper and your research just generally.
Yes. I'm an economist and have been head of the Austrian Institute of Economic Research for a long time, and now I'm leading a think tank, the so-called Policy Crossover Center, Vienna, Europe. We are an interdisciplinary think tank with many partners around the world. We speak about European problems. That is our main thing, about a better Europe, a more interdisciplinary, more open, a more green, more social Europe, and a Europe connected with the world, with our neighbors in Africa or in Asia, and be able to make a responsible globalization. That means a world in which we are very different people, very different nations, very different concepts, but with common thing, we are not my country first people, but My country has to work with other. I love to work with, I love interdisciplinarity and I love diversity, and we can learn most if we understand each other and solve problems like climate change together.
So I was wondering if you can talk more about, you mentioned like a data set that you used to compare the drop in industrial activity for these seven indicators, these activity indicators. So I was wondering if you could talk about all of that some more.
Yes, I compared the financial crisis of 2008, 2009, with the, which we call Great Recession today, with the Great Depression, which was a world crisis in the 20s, 30s of the last century. And my finding was, if we are doing this, the starting of the crisis were even worse this time in the financial crisis. The drop in the first three quarters in GDP were stronger than in the world crisis. But policy reacted totally different. In the world depression of the 20s and 30s of the last century, monetary policy tried to increase the pressure, increase interest rates, and fiscal policy said, let us cut down the fiscal deficit. And this led to a prolonged crisis. The third thing which came, that each country forecasted that Trump will become one day president of the United States and said, my country first, let us close the borders. Was for protection. We will save our country if we cut down the imports. This was the 20 cents. This again prolonged the crisis. And this crisis then took over 10 years, no chance, and unemployment rate raised, and hunger and poverty raised. In the financial crisis, it came very suddenly and very unexpected. So we know now with hindsight that the problem come up by speculation, by a lot of other things in the financial sector. It became unexpectedly that it happened just now. And then there was a little thing, what should we do? What can we do? And then the economists started saying we can do something, we've learned. That in a crisis, when the demand is decreasing, then you have to increase the fiscal response. And monetary policy should try to reduce interest rates, to increase the money supply, and this would, and above all, let us speak with each other. All the countries started to meet at G7, G10, and G20 finally. And every country promised we will increase our fiscal stimulus and we will hold down the interest rates and we will increase money supply. Let us all do this together and then the crisis took only a few quarters and 2 years. Yeah. It doesn't mean that there were not long-term problems which have then loomed for one decade, but the crisis was met by the results which economists had. Increased demand in a crisis, don't decrease it to get if you have your incoming taxes are decreasing, you have to cut the expenses too. On the contrary, if the tax receipts are decreasing, you can stimulate demand by expanding and by going for deficit. And don't close the borders, but try to cooperate with the partner. If each country tries to save itself, it saves nothing. I called these were siblings, two crises, but they got different foster parents. That means they were treated differently. And that's my result about these two crises. And therefore, the financial crisis became a small one compared to the Great Depression. The Great Depression needed 10 years and so on. And after that, the New Deal in the United States was something like this expansive program of increasing investment projects despite of budget deficits and so on.
And so why do you think that all the countries decided to apply the monetary and fiscal policy during the Great Recession and not so much during the Great Depression?
In the Great Depression, it was a world where the leaders did not speak with each other. Each looked at his countries and said what can I do? And so at that time, there were economists which some were pro-Keynesians and some were Hayekian, saying a deficit is the worst thing which can happen, and we have to live that through. And this time, most of the economists in most of the countries told there are other results. If there's a recession, you have to have a compensatory fiscal policy and you have to increase money supply. This was different, and maybe we have learned, and our societies has learned that beggaring your neighbor is not a good policy. Everybody had at that time export ratios of 50%, 30% to 50% of GDP, and we knew that there are other countries which have similar problems. We see in the TV that unemployment is rising in the United States and poverty is rising in Africa. So we knew more about the world. Economists did know more. Amongst economists, I must say the politicians took the results of some kind of economists. Even in the financial crisis, there were some economists who said, no, don't do anything. And the German Chancellor, Angela Merkel, at that time already, her first reaction was, no, we will make no deficit because of this crisis. 3 months later, maybe hearing more about the rising unemployment rate and hearing more of her partners in other parts of the world, she changed it and said one of her strengths, that if she's going in the wrong direction, she doesn't mind to change the policy to go in the. That's a good politician too, even make an error because you have first heard to the wrong advisors. You can change it before you're keeping on the wrong trail for a long time. You change your course.
And so in the paper, you mentioned that your main research question really, or main research topic, was to compare the severity of the two crises. Do you think that you can try and answer that in like one or two sentences, just like the most basic of all answers, like what would you think that is?
Yes, in one crisis, unemployment went up and up, up, up for a whole decade because nobody reacted. In the second crisis, it went up 1 year. It was then about on a higher level than before, but it didn't rise anymore and it did not rise above low two-digit levels, and not to 30 or 40%, and not for a long time. This was the result of economic policy and of not going for my country first, but for international cooperation.
Okay. And so what's your response to the argument that the Great Depression molded this new era worldwide because it was more severe and longer than the Great Recession, even though the Great Recession was less severe because of policy intervention or because there was more international cooperation? Like, do you still think that because the Great Depression was more severe, it kind of was more influential and had to cause a bigger change?
I don't think that it was really a bigger change. What it really brought was the Second World War. Unemployment rate was still so high in Europe and in Germany that as Hitler came up and he told the people, I will reduce unemployment rate, they said, finally, we found somebody who is promising us to reduce unemployment rate. And he did reduce it by investing in the war. If that's a change, yes, it was great. And fortunately, we are now on a level where we don't go that way. We have an economic answer to an economic crisis. And we have not, like the Great Depression, to say we wait of a political. The answer to the Great Depression was the political. First, nobody did anything in the United States, and then Roosevelt said, let us make the green as a big deal. And even if I heard lectures at the United States universities, where I spent some time, and half of the US professors told, yes, it was okay that Roosevelt made the big deal, but the real upswing came from the Second World War, as we started to. I think it was both 80% fortunately of the economic side, even some green investment. There were some green investment within the big deal, and therefore we in Europe now say we make a new European Green Deal, and that's exactly a program to stimulate the economy by green policy, by green investment. But finally, the really drop in the unemployment rates, the sudden drop came from from military equipment and power of the United States in the Second World War. But fortunately, we have now not to wait for such tragedies. But now the problem is, and we come now, maybe we have come to the COVID crisis, to the recent recession. We are in again pumping money into the economy, huge amounts. The United States, highly indebted, and nevertheless, they pump money. Mr. President Biden will make even more. We've pumped a lot into the programs in Europe. Not only Germany and Austria, which had low budget deficits or no budget deficit, but also Italy, which has a debt which is much higher than the gross national input. And we are pumping money into it. And now the problem is, in which sectors, in which projects are we pumping the money? Are we pumping the money into firms which which will live longer and use this money for the future? Or do we pump the money the TED project, which we shouldn't finance. That's not important how we use the money. We've decided again to use the money. So it was started as an economic, as an health crisis. It became an economic crisis, and so we have to react like we are reacting in an economic crisis, pumping money by fiscal policy and pumping money by monetary policy. But since it's so much money, we have to look in which project it is going. And that's now the decision. Will it be green projects? Will it be projects which are reducing inequality, be it regional inequality or being social inequality, or are we wasting the money? That we are putting it into the projects which should not go on. For example, a question which I like very much because it's concentrating in the traffic sector. Do we invest new money for buying old cars, which are a little bit better than the very old cars? That means diesel or gasoline combustion machines, which are a little bit better. Or are we investing the money into real new cars, which are electric, or maybe in other technology? That's important. If you're pumping money to buy again the old product, it will be wasted. It is needed in the short run, so that the economy is rebounding, but it's wasted in the long run, because after the crisis, we will have very little money for green project and so on, because we have to save again on the cut the public debt again. Therefore, we have to invest now the money into the projects which are important for the decarbonization of the world, which are important for reducing income inequalities between big centers and the periphery. And then it's we have used this crisis for a better life. Or do we use the money to spend it and then say, okay, sorry, it would be very interesting to invest now into green projects, but we have no money. And yes, we have wasted in the crisis. Never waste a good crisis. I think Churchill said this one time, and it's a very good one. A crisis is a moment where you think about your life, about your country, what is better for it. And that's a moment of decision. You can use this moment to get rid of old bad habits and make a new one, or you can prolong your old habits. What populists usually do, populist governments are promising, we will get you back the country as it was 100 years ago. So good, nice as our country had been 100 years ago. No country and no life was really nice 100 years ago. Life expectancy was 40 years, and now it's for newly born 80 or 90 years and so on. So it's a better country. But nevertheless, people which feel that their life is not very good today can be attracted by populists who are saying it will bring you back your life as it was 100 years ago. And that's important that now not the populists, but the reformers are taking the job. We have to make it together. We have to become greener. We have to reduce poverty where poverty is and where poverty is coming back. So the COVID crisis in many African countries due to the health reason and even European countries due to the working conditions in some sectors, people are crowded together and then they get ill and they have less access to the health sector. Also a problem in the United States, access to a health sector without high incomes. Let us improve this, and then we've used this crisis, which came this time from the health sector, but that's only how it came about, and how we solve it will decide about our life in the next 10 to 20 years.
So what do you think about bailing out big banks, given that what you just said about how it's important to be careful where you're giving money?
Bailing out banks makes sense insofar as we know that if a bank is going into bankruptcy, it has consequences for many more people than the customers of this specific bank. Therefore, saving banks is okay. The question is how you are doing, and this we have learned. We have said in the beginning that we have not learned so much from the Great Recession, that we have learned in Europe, and I think to some degree also in the United States. We will save banks, but we will save them if they follow new rules, if they reduce their speculation, if they don't give credits first and bundle them and sell them to some innocent people somewhere else, promising that is quite safe. Because several auditors had looked at these programs and saying we have now a system of European banking. It's not a union already, but it's a health system. So if a bank is and the first bank are supervised by European authority now, not by the national authority. National authorities are always good friends of big banks. While the European authority is looking from a wider angle on this, and we've learned it. So if now a bank in Europe needs help, it gets it from the European security mechanism and not from the local instance. So it leads to better supervision, and sometimes they ask them, let's go down with your assets, restructure, merge with somebody else, and then you can live on. So we have now a system. The goal of the European Banking System Authority now is never tax money from people should be used again to save a bank. That has to make the European security mechanism. And this can take up money somewhere in the world and so on, so that it has itself the money. It's not the taxpayer's money, but it is the money which is available on the money. A lot has been done here, and also in the United States, I think it's much safer. The system here very much. What we have not yet learned is that we should incentivize banks to make less short-term financial transactions. With short-term, I don't mean monthly. I don't mean weekly, but I mean secondly. In the millisecond, you have to make a transaction according to your computer program and so on. That is still not done. The amount of this is not dangerous. Up to now, we have seen in this COVID crisis, there was no big bank failure. The stock market is stable and so on. But nevertheless, there's too much intellectual capacity wasted into this short run capacity. Here, financial transaction tax on very short run speculative transaction would do a help. And I would be glad if it would be a worldwide financial transaction tax, because otherwise, if it's only in the United Kingdom, London is afraid of losing banks. And if it's only in France is losing and so on. But it would be better if it's a stepwise procedure to get a financial transaction tax. It would make receipts, money available for green projects, for example. So we can reduce the transactions on short-run speculation, and you could increase the money used for green projects and so on. A little bit is done here by the European Central Bank. The UN Central Bank is boosting labor, its money supply, by buying papers of firms. And the president of the European Central Bank, we will prefer green projects. If a firm is investing in carbon technology, we will try not to buy these stocks or obligations. We have just now a discussion in Europe if that's the rule, the objective of the central bank. Of a central bank of the 30s of the last century, it was not. Of a central bank, which the German bankers had envisaged 10 years ago, it was not. And it should be neutral, whatever this central bank is doing should be neutral. But now they say, if we are interfering in decreasing the interest rates so heavily, we can interfere in the right direction better than we are doing in the long run. Let us buy green papers and let us not buy papers by an oil firm or by coal firm.
Okay. And I listened to the podcast you sent me, and I was wondering if you can talk more about, you mentioned like specifically external circumstances for both the Great Recession and the Great Depression. So I was wondering if you could talk more about that.
The external conditions which made it. Yes. One of the reasons of the Great Depression was that the economy after the First World War didn't rebound enough. And it especially didn't rebound in Europe. For example, Germany had to pay back for their war crimes. That's okay on the moral way, but it did lead to a depressed German economy, which then led to Hitler, who came up with. So it is important for a crisis that you are monitoring who has done a big error, but you can't punish him for long without being yourself punished. That means if somebody is creating a problem, he should know that he had created a problem, and they should pay a little bit, have incentives not to repeat it, but he shouldn't be punished for a longer period. And that's also an important lesson for today. We are knowing about some African leaders which misused money and used all the development aid for buying weapons and going for a war. Yes, we should stop this, but don't punish the country. Don't punish the people who are starving and so on. But if they are starving, they are sticking some more to the dictator and saying the only guy who will save us is this guy. We have this problem in Europe now with non-democratic regimes in Hungary and in Poland, which are downgrading principles of the democracy. And whatever happens, if the European Union is then stopping their subsidies for these countries, Orban is saying now the Europeans are punishing Hungary. We don't try to punish Hungary, but we are trying to, that the money is not misused by Hungary. And therefore we should connect more to the NGOs, to the people of these countries. Policy should go more on several levels, not only from post to post, from a democratic president to less democratic president, but connect the people, connect with the citizens, and so on, connect with the green groups in a country. And then we will see, yes, in either of these countries, in Poland or Hungary, the illiberal leaders have a majority of their population. They all have 30-40% and use this for a majority. I don't want to say that something happened like this in the United States, where a minority is able to elect the president. Fortunately, this time it was not enough. And the lead of Biden was large enough to prevent something, but it happened. And only connecting with the people, only if the Hungarians know that we are not against Hungarian, against they are our friends. A lot of Hungarians are living in Austria, in my country, which were pushed out by the communist regime and which, you know, they know that we don't hate Hungary, but we do not like illiberal democracy. And that's something difficult, that you how you speak with systems which are not democratic, knowing and accepting that our system of democracy is not always perfect. Democracy is a learning process. I think again, it was Churchill who said it is a bad form of governing, but it's the best we know. And that we have to learn now to create up our democracy, to stabilize it, to stabilize it by good economic relations. We know a bad crisis is bad for democracy because this is a ground on which a new dictator may come up. Let us go for a strategy of an economic growth, of less inequality, of more green growth, and let us make it together in a responsible globalization scheme.
Thank you so much for talking with me. I really appreciate it.
Thank you too.
Have a great day. Bye.